I'm reading about the rise of analytics in the NBA. And one of the things that becomes apparent, especially the NBA during that time, is that analytics were driving a lot of the changes we were seeing on the court. And some of the best teams, the most successful teams, were leaning heavily into analytics, were being run by people who were leaning into analytics. Being in college at the time, we'd have pro scouts come through to watch practice. And I'm just picking everyone's brain. And what becomes apparent through conversations and reading articles is that these teams have these in-house analytics departments. Not just one person, but in a lot of cases, 5, 10 people. It seems like the teams that are innovating and winning are the ones that seem to be leaning into it the most. And I looked around the college landscape, and that wasn't happening in college.
Welcome to Titans, a special series here at Slapping Glass, exploring the stories, key decisions, and innovations of the best companies in basketball and beyond for pushing the game to new heights for coaches, players, and fans. Today, we're excited to welcome Colton Houston, co-founder of one of the fastest growing and most innovative performance analytics companies, HD Intelligence. From his early years as a director of operations to his serendipitous connection to a data scientist and future co-founder, Matt Dover, today's episode explores the story of how a Harvard grad turned basketball coach launched a company that has raised the bar for college analytics everywhere, along with what the future of analytics will look like in years to come. Please enjoy our conversation with Colton Houston. As March Madness gets set to tip off in 2024, many of the field's best men's basketball programs, including the defending national champions, UConn Huskies, have found a helping hand in the realm of in-depth analytics from Colton Houston and his team at HD Intelligence. As the demand for useful analytics has grown over the years, HDI has specialized in helping programs find an edge through highly detailed and customizable data and numbers. We start by diving in with Colton's interesting background and path that helped sow the seeds of what was to come.
Probably like a lot of stories of ideas or businesses that really grew out of an experience or a need that I saw in my own experience. I used to be a basketball coach, right? So I worked at Alabama with their men's basketball team for 9 seasons from 2010 to 2019. And in my time there, did a lot of different things on the staff, mainly was director of operations, but had a very strong interest in the analytical side of things. And that was really a formative time, I would say, as analytics were becoming more and more a part of the game of basketball at the pro level and at the college level. And it seemed like there was a need for some type of company, service, tool for coaches to use to help them use analytics to really do a lot of different things, whether it's break down my own game after the fact, scout an upcoming opponent, look at lineups. We do a lot of stuff because there's a lot of ways you can use data and the insights from data to help you do your job as a coach a little bit better. So it grew out of my experience as a coach and really feeling like there was a gap or a need for something like this. And then any good origin story, like luck's always a big part, right? So I got really lucky, very fortunate in that I'm not a data scientist. I'm not a computer programmer. I'm not a really tech savvy person, but just through a friend, I got connected with my co-founder, Matt Dover. We started this together. We run the company together. You know, we're equal partners in this. And Matt is a high level data scientist with a master's degree from Harvard and a lot of experience doing this at a pretty high level, not a sports realm, but he's an Alabama grad and a huge sports fan. And so got connected with Matt. We ended up hiring him to do some projects for us at Alabama, specifically in the scheduling area, which were very successful. And Matt and I really hit it off. And, you know, I pitched him on the idea. He liked the idea and really took both of us to launch because he's the data science, more technical product guy. You know, I'm the basketball guy with sort of the know-how of the industry and the relationships and more the coach's perspective. So, you know, it grew out of that. And I was able to convince Matt to kind of leave what he was doing to start this. And we launched 4.5 years ago and we're still going strong today.
Colton, if I could go back even a little further before we jump now back ahead and ask you as a Harvard grad yourself, how you got from Harvard to then working in college men's basketball and what was the path there?
How long is this podcast usually? I have a very circuitous route, we'll say. And it's funny, I have an older sister and I always use her as kind of the counterexample of someone who knew what they wanted to do from an early age and was laser focused on that. So when she was 13 years old, she said, I want to be a doctor when I grow up, and literally never wavered from that. And all through her adolescence, young adulthood, college, med school, she's always known she wanted to be a doctor, and she's a very successful doctor. She owns her own practice and very happy doing that. I wasn't blessed with that level of clarity at such a young age. So I've always had a lot of interests, played a lot of different sports, enjoyed all my subjects in school, was a good student, loved basketball, football, baseball, and took a lot longer to figure out what it is I wanted to do. And I had to try a few things out. So I actually studied political science in college, taught and coached at a high school for a couple of years, worked in their fundraising office as well. And then actually left that job, went to divinity school, which is where my path really gets unique, but kept kind of one foot in the basketball world, working camps, coaching youth teams. There's a lot of stories and connections out of that that you look back and you're kind of blown away at how things all unfolded. But decided in my kind of mid late 20s, pretty late, that I wanted to get into college coaching. I played 1 year at Harvard on their junior varsity team, which didn't really have any connections or meaningful experience from that. So I was really starting from scratch. It was probably 2008, 2009 range, and really decided I wanted to try to get back into coaching, but this time at the college level. And again, probably don't have enough time to get into all the doors that opened and closed. And I was married at the time. I was a newlywed. And so my wife's kind of like, I trust you, but you know, we got to figure something out here at some point. This is dragging out, but ended up having a chance to volunteer at Alabama. And Coach Anthony Grant was the coach there. He was going into his second season. There was a lot of positive energy and momentum there. And I grew up in Alabama and my dad's an alum. I grew up as a fan of the team. So it was a really cool experience for me. And just to kind of give you guys one sort of angle here, that whole time in my life, that's pretty interesting. I was told by a couple of Division III schools in the area that they did not have a spot for me to come volunteer and help them. I felt like I was scraping the bottom of the barrel, just trying to get my foot in the door of college coaching. And so I'd been told no, politely, but told no by a couple of Division III schools. And then I turn around and have a chance to work camp at Alabama, and probably out of desperation, kind of give my best sales pitch to Coach Grant, why he should let me come volunteer for them. And eventually I was offered an opportunity to do that. So I really filled like a GA type role there my first year as a volunteer, married, my wife supported us, and it was somewhat of a risk. And maybe the risk of doing that, I know I'm jumping ahead, maybe the risk of doing that made me more comfortable with the risk of starting a company, you know, 9 years later with HDI.
What you just said there, I always find it interesting with these conversations with founders. When you have the idea, you hit on with maybe how you value risk or how you assess risk, but from taking the idea and putting it into action. And when you were convincing your co-founder, Matt Dover, to join you, what was, from your past experience, that said, this is a good idea, let's do it?
I think for me, you know, Matt had to be on board, right? And I had to be on board. And for me, kind of as the person who initially had the, now Matt probably done more than I have in terms of making the idea a reality. But just in terms of that initial grain of an idea, as the person who had that and who was able to flesh it out. And I had some good friends I was working with at Alabama. And they probably thought I was crazy. I was like, guys, I have this idea. Just hear me out. You know, what if, and we could do this and we could do that. And they're kind of like, sure, man, sounds good. But I think it was easier, obviously, for me to make that commitment with it being my idea and feeling strongly about it. And honestly, having sat in the seat of a coach and seen our coaching staff go through their day-to-day grind of recruiting, scheduling games, preseason practice, scouting report, like game prep, breaking the film and the stats down after the game, showing up at practice, being in that profession for 9 years, you know, I felt very confident that the product that I had in my head and that Matt and I began to sort of actually bring to fruition, I felt very confident that product would be useful and valuable to coaches. But I had to convince Matt, who hadn't been in those locker rooms and those coaches' offices. But, you know, one of the things that made that, I think, conversation or that convincing was I was able to say, look, first of all, I'm leaving a pretty good situation here and I built up some equity in the industry 9 years in to do this. So like I'm putting my money where my mouth is, so to speak, right? And I think he saw that and trusted me, and we'd known each other a couple of years at that point. But it was also, I think you have to view the risk through the appropriate lens. And I had to say for myself, Matt had to have this own conversation with himself, was what's the worst that can happen? You know, we weren't seeking outside investment. We weren't taking on a bunch of debt or anything to do this. So the risk was, hey, it fails. We move on to something else. Matt's a smart guy with plenty of connections and skills. I was like, look, if this doesn't work, I'll go find something else. It won't be the end of the world. So I think really just viewing the risk appropriately for us probably helped with that as well. But I would say year one, you never know. Any type of startup, you don't know till you get in. So there were definitely some nerves and some wondering, especially once we launched and we had zero clients. It's like, now we actually have to go out and convince people to pay us to do this. Once you get some wins under your belt and some momentum there, you start to breathe a little easier.
I still remember the very first sale Pat and I ever had for our SG Plus membership and seeing that come through and the relief, the joy of that first sale. And for you guys, you just mentioned you had the company you started and then getting that first client in the door and the process of doing that, I guess who that was, if you're able to say it, and the process to getting there.
Yeah, I remember our first client that said yes. I also remember the first time a check arrived in the mail and just looking at it and shaking my head. I guess this is real. You know, someone actually sent me a check. But in our first season, we had 4 clients and 3 high major schools, Dayton and Cincinnati and Alabama, all jumped on board kind of midsummer, I would say. But Cincinnati was the first one. I had relationships with all 3 of those staffs already from my time at Alabama. So Alabama had a new coach in Nate Oates, but a couple of the guys on that staff had stayed back that I knew. I knew the administration athletic department there, so I was able to get in there. And then 2 guys I worked for at Alabama, Anthony Grant at Dayton and John Brandon at Cincinnati, were head coaches. So the relationship piece made it a lot easier. But when Cincinnati said, hey, we're doing it, send over the paperwork, I'm like, I don't have any paperwork. I guess I need to write up some paperwork. You know, it's one thing you realize with the startup is a lot of things you do, you're doing for the first time. And you just sort of build the plane as you fly it to some degree. We're a little bit out of that phase now, thankfully, but definitely feels like we're still in that mode sometimes. But no, I remember Cincinnati and Coach Brandon saying they wanted to work with us. And then I just don't remember the order after that, probably Alabama, then maybe Dayton. So we had 3 higher level, higher major, higher profile programs. And then Incarnate Word down in Texas. I had a buddy who was coaching there, and this was our first year. So we had these 2 different packages we were offering, kind of a high major tailored package that, you know, where we would do a lot for you. We call this our full service package. And then a less expensive package that was tailored more to low majors. And that's the one that Incarnate Word signed up for. So that they were the last one to jump on board there. But you remember those early days very vividly, right? A lot of emotional capital being spent at that point in time.
And Colton, maybe this is a good time to dive into what it is that you all actually do. And I go back to something said at the beginning, which was, you know, people that we trust saying that you guys are the best in the industry at what you do and helping, you know, take numbers and produce wins on the other side. I know that you had UConn Huskies last year as they ran to the national title, also Miami as well. And so would love to now get into what it is that you saw back when you first started and what you do now that differentiates yourself and really helps these teams produce what they're hoping to on the floor.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to talk about, of what we do, what makes us different, how we help teams. So happy to get into that. And I think I'll just start with, again, my time working as a staff member at Alabama, seeing what data and analytics were available out there, trying to make the best use of those to help our staff prepare to play opponents or look at post-game breakdowns. But at the same time, I'm reading about the rise of analytics in the NBA. And this is when the Golden State Warriors are beginning to build their, what would become their dynasty, and Daryl Morey's with the Houston Rockets sort of doing things a different way, and the pace in the league and the number of 3-point attempts, all this stuff is changing, and I'm reading everything I can get my hands on. And one of the things that becomes apparent if you follow basketball, and especially the NBA in that during that time, is that analytics were driving a lot of the changes we were seeing on the court. And some of the best teams, the most successful teams, were leaning heavily into analytics, were being run by people who were leaning into analytics. I've never worked in the NBA, so I don't want to claim that I'm an insider, but just being in college at the time, we'd have pro scouts come through to watch practice, and I'm just picking everyone's brain. And what becomes apparent through conversations and reading articles is that these teams have these in-house analytics departments, not just one person, but in a lot of cases, 5, 10 people. It seems like the teams that are innovating and winning are the ones that seem to be leaning into it the most. And I looked around the college landscape, and that wasn't happening in college. There were probably a lot of other people like me, maybe they're in a director of operations position or video coordinator position, GA, assistant coach, maybe you had a handful of head coaches who were highly analytical, but really the closest college was getting to that was that there's maybe one person on staff who checked the KenPom every day or lived in Synergy and was taking a bunch of data and then trying to figure out how can we take this data and move the needle competitively for our team. So that's really the framework out of which HDI grew. And so what we do now, to really answer your question there, Dan, is we help coaches collect, interpret, and apply data and insights from data to gain a competitive advantage. And we're really trying to replicate the model of what NBA teams are doing in-house. I am painting with a broad brush there. There are 30 NBA teams. They all do it differently. Some do it with a big staff. Some do it with a small staff. You know, there's relationship between the front office and the coaches. There's 30 different situations. But in general, what they have in common is there's an internal analytics department. By the way, the average NBA team spends $750,000 a year on analytics. And that data is a couple of years old. It's probably gone up since then. That they're highly invested. And that's not because it doesn't help. It's obviously a powerful tool. So what we do at HDI is we try to provide that level of service, that level of impact to college programs. So when they hire us we want them to do two things, really three things. We want them to use better data. We provide a lot of that. Some of it is proprietary to us. A lot of, I think, our value there is the way we present the data. Matt, my partner, is an excellent data visualization specialist. So the way the data is presented and digested makes a huge difference in how impactful it can be. We want them to use better data. We also want them to use data better. And that's where the interpretation comes in. So I would say one of our key distinctives is we do not think of ourselves as primarily a data delivery service. There are a lot of companies in the analytics space that are data delivery services. A lot of them are really good and really valuable companies. But we think of ourselves primarily as that trusted consultant who helps coaches make sense of the numbers, draw out the key insights, and then get to that practical application. And that's where the relationship piece comes in. And that's where everything we do, whether it's an opponent scouting report, a breakdown of a team's lineups, analysis of a potential transfer a team's looking at, there's sort of that written analysis and that kind of practical application piece that we put in. I do think we're unique in that regard. We're analytics consultants first and foremost, not data delivery providers.
I'd like to hit on just how you think about presenting data for the coaches. You know, you were nice enough, you shared some of the scouting reports and stuff with us, and I think it's really unique. And I'd just like to hear what you guys thought about when it was some of your initial conversations of building the business, but how you want to actually present data to these coaches.
Matt and I were always working together, and man, it was incredibly valuable to have that partner, that, you know, other set of eyes and that other brain and that sounding board and that different perspective. But I was coming from the perspective of a coach, and with our opponent scouting report, with our post-game report, we call it an HD box score. I was at Alabama at the time. So I'm thinking, hey, my role now, with the coaches I work with now, what would I like to get? What doesn't exist? But if it did exist, I would really use it and find it valuable. So I was coming at it from that perspective and I had some things in mind. And then Matt's coming at it from his perspective as a data scientist and as someone who's done a lot of data visualization. That's one of his strengths. And so it's, we're having conversations, we're iterating through different potential versions of these reports. And I probably sketched some stuff on, you know, the back of a piece of paper. Matt put something together with his fancy software. And, you know, I don't think anything that we send to our clients now is like the first version. It's like a lot of things, we work through it. And even the first year and the second year, you know, the reports we were sending out, they don't look like the reports sending out now because we're able to get feedback from our clients. And a big thing for us, again, in terms of kind of core values and identity, is to continue to evolve. And some of that is like make our products better. There have been pages of our opponent scouting report that we've eliminated to really streamline the process. There have been pages that we've added. There have been pages we've redesigned. One thing we started doing this past year is at the end of the season, surveying our coaches, getting them to give us meaningful feedback in terms of the products and what they use and what suggestions they have. And anything you can get from your clients, from your users, is gold, right? And then we can work that in to hopefully make those products better.
If I can just follow up maybe on what was maybe some of the early feedback you got in terms of changes you made and again, how you kind of presented data or data, how they wanted to view posts, scouting reports, all that stuff.
I think a challenge we've always dealt with and we probably always will deal with is the fact that not all coaches are the same. You know, you have just as much variety and diversity among these coaches as you would just, you know, out at, in the general public. And so some coaches are highly analytical and probably some of our early adopters and users were coaches that fell into that category. And so we could not give them too much data, right? We could have a long scouting report with lots of charts and graphs and numbers. Now, as we grew, we probably picked some of that low hanging fruit in terms of finding the highly analytical coaches who were, we've had coaches say, I've been waiting for a company like this to come along, right? Like you guys, I'm so glad you guys exist. I've had this idea, I've had this thought, and now you exist. And to be frank, those are kind of easy sells. And those coaches are usually super users of what we do. But we also, we pride ourselves on being able to work with any coach and provide value to any coach. We don't want to be just something that, you know, the highly analytical types can find value in. So some of the feedback we've probably gotten more recently is, can we streamline this? Can there be a version of this that focuses more on the practical takeaways with less of the data? And so I think we've done a good job of navigating that because you think about our client base, we have over 90 schools and D1 basketball we work with. Each staff has five or six people. You're talking about 500, probably closer to 600, 700 users. Think about all the coaches on all these staffs that are using our stuff. And so we can change our products a little bit from school to school, but for the most part, there's a lot of commonality and a lot of overlap with what they're all getting. So how do you create something that is moving the needle for that highly analytical, can't get enough of the data coach, and also the coach that says they don't believe in analytics, but actually they're going to look at the numbers just like everybody else, but they just need something that's very practical and very user-friendly for them. I don't know that it's something we figured out. I think we do a good job of navigating those waters, but it's always a challenge.
Colton, I actually like to go back real fast to something you said, which was getting better data for coaches to look at. And I guess maybe dive in for a second on what you mean by that and where that better data comes from. Like you mentioned, different sources that you use to get your data, but then also some of your own. And when you present data, how you make it better and where you get it from so that the coaches are getting a better accurate picture.
It's an excellent question because the data is the foundation of everything we do. The quality, the reliability of that data. Is there new data? These are all questions that we're continuing to ask because, all of our reports, all of our insights are based on the data itself, right? So one thing that struck me as I worked at Alabama, I didn't play college basketball in a meaningful way. I wasn't a manager, so I was not familiar with the inner workings of a program. I was very green when I started there. I watched our video department evolve and change rapidly and improve significantly. When I started, we were using DVDs and exchanging literal DVDs and cutting and burning DVDs for film. Then we went fully digital. Then we upgraded to really good software where you could live tag and cut and sort and do all kinds of cool stuff really quickly. And then we moved from kind of standard def to high def footage, which made a huge difference. And just in the span of 9 years, we probably had 4 or 5 significant improvements with our video platform and our video operation that allowed us to do our jobs better. To me, all coaches are going to look at data, stats, the word they use, and film when they're getting ready for a game or breaking down a game or scouting a player. I've never met a coach that doesn't look at those two things. And so I'm sitting here watching the video piece of what we do evolve rapidly, which I think is pretty typical of how things worked in college basketball. But the data piece, the stats piece was like it was frozen in time. No change there. Looking at the same box score that coaches used 50 years ago, that same one black and white sheet of paper. When coaches are preparing for a game, they just get an SID, usually a full season box score for that team stats. And just outside of shooting percentages, nothing's a rate, nothing's tempo free, nothing's advanced. And I'm sitting here and I know there's other tools out there. I'm going to KenPom every day and seeing the tempo free, opponent adjusted rate stats that aren't that complex, but that he's providing that are much more helpful, in my opinion, than what our coaches are getting. All that to say that really, when we talk about using better data with our clients, a big piece of that is taking what's already publicly available or what's already maybe not publicly available, but available to them and giving it to them in a much more user-friendly format. We build not everything we do, but some of what we do on the official game data. So where I'm talking about the box score stats, the play-by-play, which is a very kind of underutilized resource or source of data from the game, and then the shot location, which is now collected for every shot that's taken. There's a lot you can get out of that data, but it's not provided to the coaches in any type of user-friendly format. A lot of them don't even know they have access to all that. A lot of them may see it for their team, but they don't know how to get it for their upcoming opponent. So can we take that and present it to the coach in a way that's giving them more than they're currently getting, that's user-friendly, and in a way where we can help them draw out the right insights and application?
You mentioned a couple times presenting it to them in a user-friendly format. Could you just give me an example of what that may look like or what you're referring to there?
Sure. This is a principle that holds true outside of basketball analytics, outside of sports. This is just, I think, true in general, is that you can take information, the same information, and present it in two different ways that might drastically impact how well it's being received and used. So for us, some basic principles, that probably Matt has picked up along the way, because this is an area where he's experienced and really good. Some of those basic principles would be, don't put too much information on one page. Graphics are important. So we use jerseys and courts that look exactly like the jerseys and courts that teams have in college basketball. We use players' faces, right? And we have to put time into getting those designed and getting those cropped and getting those in the right format and integrating that with our stuff. I mean, the types of graphs and charts you pick. So pie graphs versus bar graphs. And again, I'm really, really indebted to Matt because he's really good at this stuff. I might have an idea what something could look like. He goes back in his lab, as we'll say, and kind of cooks it up and brings it out. And it looks way better than I ever could have imagined. And I also want to give a shout out to our product team. In the first year or two, it was just me and Matt doing all this. And now we have 3 full-time product specialists that report to Matt, but do a lot of this stuff on their own. They're really good at it as well. Another example would be, and this sounds really elementary, but just color coding things. We do a lot of red, yellow, green. So you get a page of numbers. Let's say it's a post-game report with stats of how your team played. Okay, that's great. If you just go through and you color code those stats green for areas where you performed well, and then red for areas where you struggled, it makes a world of difference for the usability, the utility from the coach's standpoint.
One other question with gathering, getting better data, but then now the interpretation piece. I'd like to just ask a question about sample size. With the NBA, you know, they had 80 plus, maybe sometimes 100. So they're getting larger sample size. But in college, teams are playing, you know, maybe 30, 35 games. And so how do you guys account for when it comes to maybe interpreting this data? Like, what's a trend? What's an outlier? And what information to disseminate to your coaches or your teams?
It's a significant concern. And really, it's something that we have to educate our teams on, because we don't want to take one game and a player shot, he was 0 for 3 from 3 in one game. Well, he can't shoot. That's 0%. Common sense tells you that sample size is too small to make a judgment, right? But beyond that common sense, again, Matt and our product team, because this is their area of expertise, can really say our level of certainty is X based on the sample size being Y size. And so that is something that we have to train our coaches on. A big piece of that is, because we're not just giving coaches data, we're helping them interpret and apply. We will say, hey, through 5 games, this team is struggling from 3. They're shooting 25%. But this same roster last year, which has a lot of continuity this year, shot 35% last year, like pointing those things out. So I'll give you one example right now of a team that I work with directly. I won't name the team, but they're off to a good start. Their offense is performing really well. And I'm sending them a report on their first, I think it's like 8 games. They're shooting like 42% from 3, which is great. They have a couple of really good shooters, and they expected that to be a strength. It's still a small sample size. And so I'm calling out for them that, hey, we're playing to the level offensively we want to play. We helped them establish a goal in the preseason of being a top whatever offense in the country. They're meeting that goal. But the main driver of that is their high volume and really high efficient from 3. What I called out for them is, guys, only one team in the country shot better than 40% from 3 last year. So more likely than not, this level of 3-point efficiency is not sustainable. And when or if that number comes back down to earth a little bit, our overall offensive efficiency will decrease. So in order to sustain the level we're playing at right now overall on offense, we need to think about, what are we going to do a little bit better? Where can we improve? Sort of balance out the, what I would say, I hope I'm wrong here, but what I would say is sort of the inevitable regression of their 3-point efficiency. So then we talk through different areas on off, but sample size is a huge piece of it, kind of constantly keeping that in the back of our minds.
Colton, you said something interesting with working with that team, and you set some goals. I know there are some commonalities among elite offenses and elite defenses, and what in terms of maybe stats teams should be thinking about?
You guys are asking excellent questions. We get that a lot from coaches. I would say on the defensive end, it's a little easier to answer. We've done some work on this fairly recently, and one of the commonalities among elite defenses is the ability to limit both volume and efficiency of shots at the rim. So there's going to be exceptions to everything. There's probably a couple teams out there that are really good defensively who maybe aren't as strong there, but when we ran the analysis, that was really clear on the defensive end of the floor. On the offensive end of the floor, you probably have a little more diversity in terms of the way teams play. There are teams that can be really good offensively who don't necessarily take a lot of threes, who don't get a lot of offensive rebounds. I do think that turnovers, you can have a close to average turnover rate. You can't be a great offense with a high turnover rate. And I don't know how much we want to nerd out on the basketball analytics here, but you think about the four factors, right? Effective field goal percentage, turnover rate, offensive rebound rate, free throw rate. That effective field goal percentage really is the result of a lot of other stats in terms of different types of shots, shot selection, efficiency from different levels. So effective field goal percentage is really the amalgamation of 6 or 7 other stats, whereas turnover rate, offensive rebound rate, free throw rate are more sort of pure measuring one thing type of stats. On the offensive end of the floor, that turnover rate, it needs to be fairly low if you're going to have an elite offense. Again, on the defensive end, the commonality we found is ability to limit both volume and efficiency, or in some cases, maybe one or the other, but you have to find a way to slow down teams scoring at the rim. If you're giving up a lot of baskets at the rim, you're not going to be an excellent defense.
Wanted to turn to the future of HDI, and I guess the future of what you all do, but where you see maybe analytics trending as well, as far as how you work with teams and what they're wanting, and anything from your standpoint as a company as we kind of move forward.
We think about this all the time. We're fortunate, 5 years in now, you know, we've grown and we have a number of clients that we work with. Many have been with us for a number of years now, but the space is rapidly evolving. It really is. And one of the things that we're excited about is, I feel like we've kind of established, you know, our brand and our relationships with our clients, and we're pretty good at what we do. But again, I think I mentioned this earlier, but one of our core values is continuing to evolve. And so we've touched on some of this already, but part of that is the products we offer. Can we make this report a little better? Can we think about the way that we build relationships and service our clients better? Because we're obviously remote, right? We don't have an office on the 90 campuses where our teams are, right? So we're trying to service them as remote de facto staff members. So thinking about how to do that better, how to communicate better. The data piece is huge here. So as we move forward, one thing that is really already happening for us is that there is more data that is now available for college basketball games than there was 2 years ago. And probably the most exciting new development there is player tracking data, or a fairly accurate facsimile of player tracking data becoming available. It's still in the early stages. It's not available for every team. It's pretty labor intensive to get that data, but we've partnered with some other companies who are really for the first time able to provide that to us. And that opens up a whole new world of possibilities with, we call it 11 point tracking data, 5 players from one team, 5 players from another team in the ball, like knowing where those 11 different points on the court are, if you will, opens up, man, a world of possibilities in terms of what we can do. Because the NBA's had these Second Spectrum and other companies who they've worked with there, they've partnered with those companies. They've had player tracking data for a number of years now. And so through some of our relationships with folks on that level, you know, we kind of already have an idea of the products we can build out. And this isn't something we publicly talked about, so I guess I'm breaking this on your podcast, but we're beta testing with a couple teams right now. I won't name the teams. We're beta testing our player tracking data products this year. And the goal is to roll that out on a wider scale next year. The challenge with that has honestly been thinking about what do we do with this data and what do we not do with this data? Because there's so much you can do knowing where everyone is at any given moment on the court. Some of the obvious applications would be, how close is the nearest defender on a shot? That's data that up till now we didn't have, which is massively important on a number of different levels, right? Or spacing, or how all teams are guarding a ball screen. What type of defense is this team playing? There's a lot there. So for us moving forward, we feel like we have a lot of respect for other companies out there. We really kind of keep our heads down and focus on ourselves and being the best we can be. We feel like we've established ourselves as sort of the leader in this space for college basketball analytics and in the role that we're in. But the only way we maintain that, and the only way we continue to grow, is that continued evolution. So it's relationships, it's making our existing products better. And then I think the big one for us right now that we're really excited about is, what new products can we roll out? It's exciting.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please make sure to visit slappingglass.com for more information on the free newsletter, Slapping Glass Plus, and much more. Have a great week coaching, and we'll see you next time on Slapping Glass.
Would we have a name yet for this thing? I have like Slapping Backboard.
Slapping Glass.
Slapping Glass. That's kind of funny.
I like that. Let's roll Slapping Glass.